So we've talked a lot today about citizen science, but what about taking that and turning it into action, citizen action? It's the Lee Rayburn Show, and our next guest is the program manager for the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, which is pulling together community members, young and old, to complete projects that benefit nearby waters and water quality. And if you have questions about getting involved, getting active, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@WPR.org. Our guest, the program manager for the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, Christy Heiser. And Christy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So let's start at the beginning. What is the Root Pike Basin? Where is it?
So we are down here in southeastern Wisconsin along the Lake Michigan shoreline. So it's mainly Kenosha and Racine counties, a little bit of Milwaukee County, a little bit of Waukesha County as well.
And how many people would that include?
Oof. A lot. I actually don't have that number off the top of my head, but there is a lot of people down here. Development is definitely picking up in our quarter of the state.
So. Which would I would imagine would be sort of part of the concern when it comes to water quality and the watershed. So what is this Root Pike Watershed?
So our organization, we were started by the DNR in the 90s, really to be the grassroots organization for our area, looking out for our water quality and educating people and working to get projects kind of in the ground that help water quality.
And it's restoring some of the broken Lake Michigan rivers that have been lost to development and construction and encroachment of population growth, right?
Yes. Yeah. All of our rivers down here are classified as impaired, and that's coming from the Environmental Protection Agency's 303D impaired waters list. So basically too many pollutants in the water that are coming in from stormwater runoff.
All of our rivers are impaired.
Yeah.
So there,
therein
lies the challenge. So where do you begin when it comes to repairing these rivers?
I would say my job is very fun because we look at things from a lot of different angles. So from the restoration side of things, large scale, small scale, working with schools through the Pollinator Patch Program, just general education, working with farmers. So there's a lot of different ways to look at the same problem, which keeps things exciting for me.
So with 20 years now of the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, where do you see your successes and where do you see your challenges?
We have, so the organization really started as more of an education effort and smaller kind of like rain garden projects. And within the last 10 years, we've switched over to implementing what's called the 9-key element watershed restoration plans. So these are larger scale tracts of lands. We're looking at acres rather than 1,000 square feet. And as all these projects kind of get in the ground and then start to link up, we're starting to see those benefits kind of popping on the land and on the water.
Yeah. And you mentioned the Pollinator Patch Program. Tell us a little bit about it and how you are enlisting the support of high schoolers.
Yeah. So the Pollinator Patch Program actually got started in 2019 working with UW Parkside. So our office is actually on UW Parkside property. And we were doing some restoration on their cross-country course. And we kind of realized, like, we can't do it all because there's limited funds, there's limited, you know, staff. So we decided to kind of take the watershed in these patches, as we call them. And then I came on board about 5 years ago, and we then started bringing the program into the schools. And how can we get the kids involved, kind of prepping their own native plant spaces and planting them and taking care of them and doing maintaining and monitoring?
How can and what's the reaction been like from the high school students? What do you get as feedback?
The high schools are very fun to work with. I would say it started off with elementary, and I still love working in elementary school as well. So we got the whole range. But with high schools, like at Central, you can have them start to grow their own plants, and they can really start to do more of that citizen science monitoring and invasive species removal. So the older the kids get, the more we can do with them, and the more they are to kind of take these practices into their homes, which is really the ultimate goal.
So what do you do with the youngins then? How do you impart this to the elementary schools?
They do the same thing. So these kids are out there, they're laying down mulch and cardboard, and I just give them different tools that are safer. Like they're using a bucket instead of a shovel. they're planting the plants. They just have little trowels instead of big shovels. So there's a way to scale it to the little kids. I've had 4K through college students planting pollinator patches. So
what brought you, Christy, to the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network? What got you involved in this and so passionate about it?
Yeah. So I was a middle school teacher, and then I was finishing my master's in conservation biology. I found Root Pike Win was the local group, and I was able to do an internship here. Uh-huh. And then I was lucky enough, I was offered the job for a year, and I've just been lucky enough that they've been able to keep me around this long and kind of get these programs off the ground.
So you started as an educator, and I imagine to some degree that is how you see things, that part of this work that lies ahead in restoring our waters has to do with education and all ages beyond elementary and high school. It has to do with folks my age as well.
Yes, everyone's involved, elected officials, down to 4K. So I'm talking to anybody and everybody that will listen.
Really. Well, what do you have to impart to our elected officials, Christy? I am curious.
Just the general awareness about native plants and how great they are, not just for beauty and pollinator habitat, but also soaking up stormwater. And so there's really practical applications for flood management and just reducing maintenance costs of unnecessary mowing. So it's really just a different perspective depending on who you're talking to, but it's all kind of chipping away at the same water quality problem.
Sure, these native species, putting them around our waters, but what? So when we talk about citizen action, what can I do? What role would I play, and how would native species have a part in it?
So if you can get rid of some of your lawn and put these native plants back into the ground, that's the dream. So every square foot of native landscaping can manage roughly 0.4 gallons of water per, up to 0.4 gallons of water per storm event. So that really starts to add up quickly when people are converting some of their lawn with the very shallow roots, because we're talking 2 to 3 inches versus 6 to 15 feet with the native plants. So the more stormwater we can soak up with these plants, the less those pollutants are entering our water bodies.
So this is purely anecdotal, but when I've brought this up before, somebody else has brought it up to me about, I'd love to grow some native plants and get rid of my lawn, but what would the neighbors say? So do you have a response or answer for, what do I tell the neighbors when I throw the lawn away and you know, the putting green and bring back some native plants?
Yeah, there is a way to do it with intention. I think that people see just like these weedy messes and they're like, they're all native plants are bad. But if you put an intentional border and you have things blooming throughout the season, maybe you do a strategic mow where you're cutting it down if people don't want it standing during the winter. There are ways to get around the naysayers, if you will.
So yeah, these native plants could actually be by design. You could create something that looks like, you know, that with intent, as you mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Christy Heiser, our guest, program manager for the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network. And if you've got questions about actions you can take, native plants you'd like to see, you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or email us talk@wpr.org. What tips do you have for us, Christy, when it comes to someone who'd like to start planting natives in order to improve water quality, to abate some of our flooding concerns and help out pollinators?
Well, site prep, really thorough site prep is kind of the best thing you can do to set you up for success in the long term. Because ideally, if you are prepping that site and you're really killing off the seed bank of the weedy stuff that's in there, killing off the grass, then you're not going to have to do as much weeding and hand pulling down the road. So for site prep, you can kill it off with cardboard and mulch. We let it sit for a minimum of 2 months, but the longer is the better. Being careful with the type of mulch you bring in, because sometimes it can have a lot of weeds in it. It can have different funguses and stuff that we don't want. Or like what Central High School did is they were kind of the demo project for smothering with black plastic. Oh. So we tried that off with them. And so far things are going really well, which is exciting. But the longer you can let your site die off before planting it, the better off you'll be.
What about for pollinators? What would you recommend? We had just heard about this new pale swallow wort invasive species that monarchs have a tendency to lay their eggs on because it looks like it would be their food supply, but they can't eat it so that their eggs are dying. This is kind of a tragic story that I just heard about from UW-Madison's Extension of Forestry and Wildlife. I know. So now I'm like, what can we do for our pollinators? I want to find out, you know, what kind of native plants are readily available for them.
Yeah. So on our website, Root Pikeman's website, we have a Go Native page where there's a good starter list, at least down here in southeastern Wisconsin in our area, of different nurseries you can shop at, different native plants you can select. I really encourage people to find your true local native nursery or like your Wild Ones chapter. That's another great nonprofit that focuses just on native plants. They typically have plant sales. Because you can't really find native plants in your general big box store, which is the issue. So that's kind of the barrier that I'm finding for people getting their plants in the ground is they don't know where to find them.
Interesting. And the website is RootPike, W-I-N, as in Watershed Initiative Network. RootPike, WIN.org. We'll have a link at WPR.org/Lee, along with all the links to our programs. But again, it's RootPike, WIN.org. And we're talking a lot about plants when we're talking about watershed. And I think that maybe it's not a direct connection that most folks would make, that I could have an impact on water quality when I have intention when it comes to planting native species in Wisconsin. So make that connection for us in a way that, you know, everybody, I just, you know, it's interesting to me, but at the same time, it's not abundantly obvious to everybody, I don't think.
Yeah. And I touched on it a little bit earlier, but it all comes down to those deep root systems, being able to infiltrate our stormwater right where it lands. So when it rains, we want that water going right back under the ground, like how it used to when we had forests and prairies and wetlands everywhere. And the more we can soak up that water, if it's not moving across the ground, it's not bringing excess phosphorus and sediment, E. coli, chlorides, and all these different things that are degrading our water.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that in our lakes around Madison recently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Madison's definitely.
That the runoff has been had a negative impact, I will say nicely, and a certain odor on our Wisconsin lakes. So this would make a lot of sense to, I think, in at least in my area, when it comes to stormwater, that these native plants would be an opportunity. When it comes to pollinators, these native plants would be an opportunity. It sounds like win-win. So where's the rub? What's the challenge as you see it, Christy?
The main challenge is getting people to try it. I also try some native plants. Put one in your yard to start off with.
Would you recommend? Pick one for me.
I feel like a good starter is even just like a pale purple coneflower, or a purple coneflower is a good one that people are familiar with. I love like bee balm because it's spread, but like I guess I like those more aggressive looking ones. But or like a butterfly milkweed, or just a type of milkweed that we can support the monarchs, kind of like what you were talking about earlier. That's a good starter, because when people see monarchs, it tends to make them happy. So
Christy Heiser, our guest from the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, and we welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to talk@wpr.org. And not all plants attract pollinators, though. Would these native plants have an opportunity to, are there native plants that you wouldn't recommend that would be a cure-all, solve-all for our watershed and pollinators?
I would just say you want to have some type of a variety, something that's going to bloom spring, summer, and fall. Mm. For me, there's no native plant I wouldn't put in the ground, but I think it's definitely, there's some like cut plant, which I love, but that really spreads through an area. So like if you're in a smaller space, you kind of want to be mindful of some of those species that get more aggressive and really kind of spread too much.
All right. That makes sense to me. And what do you do about invasive species? How do you monitor for them, control them, and limit them in your garden?
So that's where I love bringing it back and working with the school. So we don't just install the garden and go away. I get to come back and do this continuous watershed education. And then we go outside and we're identifying the invasive species, and a lot of them we're just, we can hand pull with what kind of pops up. So far we're lucky at the different schools where I don't even need to consider herbicide or anything like that when working with children, which is really great. So hand pulling, or sometimes it's just like a strategic mowing and you want to chop things down before those invasive seed heads are really going to bloom and then spread the seeds everywhere.
You'd mentioned a little bit earlier about, you know, that you can only do so much with what you've got. And I would like to know from you, if you had everything you needed, what would that look like for the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network? If you had all the resources, Christy, what could you do and what kind of difference do you think you could make?
If I had millions and millions of dollars, all of our eroded stream banks would actually be, our rivers would be back in good health. You shouldn't be able to walk up to a river and drop 5 to 20 feet to the bottom of the river. It should be this nice gradual slope where we're connected to the floodplain and these native plants are alongside of our rivers to help stabilize them and soak up water. We'd have less wetland destruction. We'd have more wetlands actually being restored and enhanced because those are great for purifying water. Every school would have a pollinator patch. I could spend millions easy to help our water quality.
There is something on your website, I think, about pet waste affecting water quality. What's that about?
Yeah, so that's actually one of the things that I have to do education on. So my kind of education standards really come from the Department of Natural Resources, and it's embedded in these stormwater permits that the municipalities have. And E. coli bacteria is a big concern when it comes to pet waste. So we really want people picking up after their pets, especially if you're in like a city setting where you're right next to a storm drain. There's not plants or really anything that's going to help break down that E. coli by the time it reaches your waterways and ultimately your beach. Because when we have too much E. coli in the water, those are your beach closures, which happen along Lake Michigan shoreline frequently in the summers.
Yeah, we've seen that story before. And pet waste could play a role in mitigating that if we control it and take care of it.
Yes.
Very interesting. When it comes to our floodplains and wetlands, are there roles that we can play individually? Does it take a network like yours? Are there actions that I could participate in and make a difference with?
If you have a wetland on your property, definitely you can look at different native plants that you can kind of just help enhance on your own property. Otherwise, I would say keeping an eye on these new developments that are coming into your area, because sometimes wetlands are just filled, sometimes, and then they're not replaced other places. It kind of depends on the side. So really just keeping an eye on what's going on in your community. And if there's large swaths of wetlands that are going to be destroyed, letting your elected officials know you don't like it.
I was just going to bring up that you mentioned yourself as identify yourself as an educator. You mentioned elected officials. And when it comes to our government, I just see it as an organized extension of community, that it is the place where we can find resources that we wouldn't have resources on our own enough to do. So if there were an opportunity for me to take action, if I didn't have a wetland on my property, it might have more to do with letting elected officials know my concerns or expressing my values about wetlands and floodplains and the role that they play. And especially since we've seen an increase in flooding in some of our urban areas, and we've seen, you know, 100-year rainfalls in a matter of a handful of years, that things are changing. And part of that is the development that's been encroaching and what we've lost as a result, and how we express ourselves in terms of an organized extension of community in the values that we have, Christy.
Yeah, I would also say if you have a wetland preserve near you that has a friends group or volunteer opportunities, volunteers are so critical to the restoration process because everything costs money. But when you have people that are just educated and dedicated and getting their hands dirty, that makes these projects move faster and further.
That your sweat equity actually has a value too. It doesn't necessarily have to be your dollar. Sometimes your sweat will be just as good.
Yep, exactly.
I really like that. And so what do you have planned next for the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network? What is on your agenda going forward? Do you have any events coming up? Are you getting ready for a new school year? Do you have new ideas for the kids?
Yes, I'll be planting a pollinator patch with some summer school kids in the next few weeks. And then it is just like looking ahead to what are we going to do for the fall and kind of next year's plans. And like I mentioned, working with high school groups that they can come out, and some schools actually go out to different restoration sites too, if they're in a spot where they can't have a pollinator patch on their school property, because we are in some urban areas where there's just not land. So just getting kids involved, whether it's at their own school or just in their community, is a really important and really great part of my job.
Are there restoration sites that you have particularly in mind for these kids?
So down here in Kenosha, I work with another school, Harborside Academy, and they come to Washington Park, and they're going to come to the Shagbark Recreation Area. And these are both in the city of Kenosha, and they're just, the Shagbark Recreation Area is a seeded prairie. So it's in year two, I believe. And then they're going to come to Washington Park, where we did a 14,000 square foot pollinator patch that was all planted by community members and volunteers, and just getting them back out to kind of look at, you know, native plant ratios and invasive plants, and then get their hands dirty pulling plants or pulling vases.
much dirtier than the classroom, I would imagine. A little more fun as well. So this Root Pike watershed, it flows from Kenosha to Racine all the way up to Milwaukee and all points in between. And you've mentioned a number of schools that you're involved with the Watershed Initiative Network. Christy, how can schools get involved with you? What should they consider about participation and perhaps, you know, playing a role in the kids' education, regardless of, you know, elementary school, or in the event of elementary schools or high schools?
Yeah. So if you're down in our area, the Root Pike Basin, please reach out and we can discuss it. but if not, I'm sure there's other groups near you too that would be willing to support your school. Or I can just, you know, kind of give you my guidance. I like to work with people all throughout the state. The main thing is it's really important to have your administration involved, your facilities team involved, and then a strong group of teachers, because there is a lot of changeover in staff. And for these things to be successful, you need people who are enthusiastic and wanting to bring their kids outside, because that is not everybody's cup of tea. It's a wild environment. Kids get excited and it's less controlled, definitely. So just kind of finding those right partners that are willing to kind of go with the flow and tackle whatever comes at them.
But it's also hands-on education. And for some, I understand this, for some kids, that is their best way to learn. That is, you know, an opportunity for them that perhaps they would miss in the classroom in a more academic setting. A hands-on setting could provide a greater education for some.
Absolutely. I think when I was a little kid, pond water day was always one of my favorite days, where we were looking at the mugs in the water. And now I get to do that and get paid to do that. So like those experiences with schools and young people really can change the trajectory of their future.
So you had pond water day. Do you have days for your education now? Do you have names for your days? Like it's invasive species day, or?
That's how we did it with the Harborside Academy. So the kids, one day they're doing a plant survey, one day they're doing a bumblebee survey, other days it's a macro invertebrate survey is the technical term.
But you don't do you give the kids the technical term? Are they calling it the macro invertebrate survey, or?
Yeah, they're learning, and that's great with the teachers. They're teaching it in the classroom, then they get to meet up with me in the field, and then they go back to the classroom, they're analyzing the data, they send it back to me. It's a really great partnership with a lot of these educators.
Your enthusiasm is contagious. Your education is much appreciated for all ages and all places. There's an opportunity to participate in our water quality and restoring some of our waterways. Christy Heiser, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Christy Heiser is the program manager for the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network. And again, that website is rootpikewin.org. And we'll have a link to that along with everything else on the show today at wpr.org/Lee. Coming up tomorrow on the show, it is home improvement. And we will have Chad Spate joining us again to answer your home improvement questions and handle any of your routine home maintenance. And also tomorrow, we will take a look at the power surging through your walls and what you need to know through the eyes of an electrician. Home Improvement Day tomorrow from 11 to 1 right here on The Lee Rayburn Show. I am Lee Rayburn, and you are listening to WPR News.